is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete. What's up?
And on The Stack, we talk about a ton of books that have come out this week. We give them reviews, and then we offer a grade of thumbs up or thumbs down. And then,
We always do that.
Cute at the end. We add together all the thumbs ups and the thumbs down, and whatever direction we go in, whatever gets more, that is the judgment we make upon the world for this week. So
yes.
Let's get this started, because this is very important to the world leaders who listen to this podcast. We're going to kick it off with Guardians of the Galaxy number 1 from Marvel, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Kev Walker. In this, we are meeting a very different, kind of the same lineup of Guardians of the Galaxy, but very different in terms of they are on a Western planet. They're pretty much cowboy archetypes, and they're trying to avoid something called Grootfall. Then we discover what that is over the course of the comic. Obviously, this is a big...
It was Groot-related, as predicted.
Was. Very spoiler.
Groot. Yeah.
This is obviously a big thing that is telling a very different story, but it is setting things up for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which is coming to theaters very soon. What'd you guys think about this book?
I loved it. I really love the art style. I love how each character got an entrance, and none bigger than Grootfall. This just got me excited for Guardians. I think this did a great job of being a number one and kind of introducing a new storyline and everything for these characters that we know. So yeah, I was super impressed with this. I thought it was a great ish.
The great ish. This reminded me a lot of a little show called Firefly, also the movie Serenity, in a way that I felt it was almost a little too close to that for my taste. It did make me think that we are going to get maybe an opening sequence that is like this for the Guardians movie, because this feels like a very particular swing. But as it went on, I really like Grootfall, and that being something that they're going to have to contend with, one of their own that has turned on the universe, and it's their whole job now to try to stop Groot from killing people. So I think it's a fun premise for the book.
I agree on all of that. I liked the Grootfall thing quite a bit. Kev Walker is awesome on ARC. Such a good choice. Particularly the characterization of Mantis is very fun. The way that he draws him. I thought that was a delight throughout. I also agree. I was very surprised, given this team, Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, we've been really liking their stuff on other books. This felt a little derivative of other things. In particular, to me, this felt derivative of Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, specifically because we're getting narration from a young kid who lives on this planet who's like, well, I followed the Guardians of the Galaxy and things got real bad from here, but you'll see that later. And... I don't know. I just wasn't necessarily
exactly. That wasn't exactly how
that
it
was
went,
word for word. I'm reading the issue right now. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a quote.
It wasn't, but it definitely struck me like that comic book, which is fine. Things can be derivative of other things. Ultimately, it is up to, I'm very curious to check out the second issue and see how this story paces out issue by issue, because they're smart writers. They're good writers. There's a lot of different places.
Great artists.
Great artist. Where's Rocket? What's going on with Rocket? Where is he? I guess we'll find out. There we go.
Yeah.
Let's move to an advanced one. This was actually supposed to come out today, but it got kicked back a couple of weeks because of a printing problem. World Tree number 1. It's now coming out April 26th from Image Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Fernando Blanco. Because it is not coming out for a couple of weeks, we will keep this relatively spoiler-free. If you want to know nothing about the book, turn away. But I'll say another big win for JT4.
This book was, I'm going to just speak for Pete, scary for Pete.
I'm going to speak for Justin. This is a book that you don't want to read on the subway.
Now I've turned the corner on that. Now I do want to read books like this in the subway. I show them to everybody, and I'm like, that's new
naked
to me.
Lady. You ever see a naked lady before?
You ever see a naked tattooed lady, huh, who likes killing people? Huh? You ever seen that?
P, Pete, you haven't been on the subway in a while, but there's often a nude person who has tattoos also on the subway. So it feels like it softened the blow a little bit of having.
I'm glad that, Alex, you are doing the kind of like setting up the comic, because I thought this was World Tour 33, number one. So I'm glad that you got to announce it, because I was a little off on what was happening when you said World Tree. I was going through my notes like, where's World Tree? I don't remember that comic. But yeah, this was, you know, had a lot of shock value, you know, a lot of people dying. What was weird was it was like, you know, the scene later on in the comic where like this guy is dying in front of his brother. And he's like, yo, you ought to go online to check this out. It's really a lot of fun. It's like, well, you're not really selling it, because it seems like if I'm going to go do this, this naked tattooed lady is going to find me and then murder me in front of my family. So maybe not a cool plug.
Well, but the internet's really addictive, so like you'll probably check it out.
You'll probably check it out because it's got naked ladies there. So
I mean, first of all, to be clear to anybody listening, there is an extremely naked lady throughout this book. But the way that Fernando Blanco draws her, she is a terrifying figure throughout. Yeah. It is a fascinating mystery that plays her. All of the characters, you're introduced to a lot of characters in a lot of different places as this mystery of exactly what is going on starts to unfold. I know we don't speak his name anymore, but I'm going to mention it anyway. This straight up feels like James Tynion IV doing a Warren Ellis book, like a vintage, probably not Wildstorm Authority, but definitely like early Image Warren Ellis stuff, with like big world spanning dark ideas. Feels, it's not exactly like Trees or anything like that, but that sort of thing.
I was going to say, like, tonally, maybe it's like Trees, where it's a mystery and it's like there's dark stuff on the horizon. And then this one just leans so much harder into like straight up very modern horror, like almost headline grabbing, ripped from the headline style horror. That was unsettling to me, but I mean, JT4 just writes the shit out of this book like he does.
JT4 is a great writer. We all agree. So much better than JT Sis. But I think what's interesting here is, you know, some people might be listening and be like, what, naked lady, why isn't she put on clothes? You find out in this issue, spoilers, she just sucks at wearing clothes. You know what I mean? Like, she tries to wear clothes, but it doesn't really work. You can kind of like still see everything. So then she takes them off because there really isn't a point. You know what I mean?
And I have shorts like that, right? Too. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I have shorts that I'm just like, oof, I forgot there's a big hole there.
Oh, where my nuts are.
At work, yeah. Legitimately, the other day, I was like, oh no, this seam is broken wide open. I've been working from home way too long. Everybody can see the side of my leg when I sit down.
Oh, yes, very erogenous zone you're describing.
Side of my hairy, terrible leg. Lazarus Planet, Revenge of the Gods, number 3 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, Becky Cloonan, and Michael W. Conrad, art by Emanuela Lupacino, and Cian Torme, and Aletha Martinez. This is continuing the story that is teaming up the Shazam world with Wonder Woman world as they fight The Revenge of the Gods, from the title. This issue focuses a little bit more on Billy Batson Shazam than the Wonder Woman side of things, though we do get a backup of what is going on, I believe, on Themyscira with some of the other characters. I'm really enjoying this crossover. This is a big, fun Wonder Woman story.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. And thank God. It's thank the gods who are set gods, on revenge. Man. This is still part of the Lazarus Planet event that I think we are I don't know if we'll
never
ever
end.
Leave this.
Never
yeah, this
end.
Is great. Yeah, this
it
is so much
keeps
fun.
Coming back to life in new and surprising ways. But it is it's a good story. It's actually a Shazam story that focuses on the main Shazam that I like this the way Shazam is written here, and I often find that I don't. So this
yeah,
is
I agree. Also, some really great covers for this. And I also loved the kind of line where it's like, man, gods are really vain. That was a fun kind of moment there.
So this is a fun book if you're looking for a good crossover between Shazam and Wonder Woman. Next up, Lazarus Planet, Star Wars Ewoks number one. It's yes. not Lazarus Planet.
Come on. Good.
This is from Marvel, written by Alyssa Wong, art by Lee Garbett and Java Tartaglia, Polina Ganachow, Kyle Hotz, and Rachel Rosenberg, and Casper Wingard. This is another one-shot issue. I think it was last week we talked about the Jabba the Hutt one, but they're doing a bunch of one-shots. They're paying tribute to Return of the Jedi on the 30th anniversary of the movie. And here we get a nearly silent book as a bunch of Ewoks during Return of the Jedi sit around and tell each other different stories to pass the time. This is great. This is one of my favorite books of the week. I had so much fun reading this. Yes, the art styles were so good.
Very surprising and fun. Yeah, I totally agree.
From adorable Ewok stories to legitimately like kind of terrifying horror stories.
Yeah.
This was a blast.
I was like, okay, what is this going to be? First story was kind of like an adorable Grinch family meets the Ewoks kind of situation. But the art really was fantastic and made it a lot of fun. But yeah, I love the lack of word balloons. And then they became kind of deeper and more powerful as we went. I was super impressed with this. I was like, what is this going to be? They did this so well, handled it so well. This is a great collection of Ewok stories.
Here's the thing. Ewoks can talk to each other. Why? The fact that all three of these stories were silent, I thought was a little bit, I would like to hear the Ewoks talking. And I thought it was a little bit of a cheat that we didn't get any talking.
I've got a great movie you should check out if you want to hear Ewoks talking.
That's, yeah, I do want
to
hear.
It's called Caravan of Courage, Justin. Caravan of Courage.
Okay. Wow, really pressing it. And I thought this was fun, but like I wanted a little bit more depth, I think, to it here.
Boo.
I can agree with Pete here. Boo.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to agree with the Ewok Cultural Society that wants to get into some real shit rather than be like, look, this one sort of is holding hands with a Grinch that was invented but never seen on Endor. Where the Grinches live, and why aren't they helping out the rebellion? Where were they? No wonder they weren't at the party at the end, and they don't even know the words to Yubnub.
The Giant Kaku, number one from Image Comics, written by Jared Dugan, art by Scott Koblish. This is a story about what if Godzilla wanted to fuck a city?
And you know what? I didn't realize the premise until sort of halfway through, and I was like, oh, they were like, oh, Kaku.
We like Jerry Dugan here, right? Like, yeah, sure, his stuff is very fun.
The Dukes.
Scott Koblish, great art. Very good.
Great at drawing giant penises, scaly penises.
The problem is, like, this is a comedy book, and I don't know if you've seen it, Justin, but I'm pretty sure you've seen it, Pete. The Harley Quinn Valentine's Day special has this whole plot about Bane growing to gigantic size, getting extraordinarily horny and just wanting to fuck Gotham City, ending with wanting to fuck a gigantic Brett Goldstein who's doing a poetry reading concert in Gotham. It's hilarious. It is so good. This comes second. So if I had seen this ejaculated second. Sorry, is that better?
That's the right word. Anyway, real cipher over here.
This
real
was
human
released.
Thesaurus.
Released? Is that better? That's also not better.
Yeah.
Anyway, this one came out after. I don't know. I now am lost. You know my point. I don't need to say it.
Yeah. Alex is blushing. Oh, sorry. Alex is coming.
All right. So I want to know from you guys, like the first time you were kind of looking at this. So I was like, wait a second, what? Because I had to go back because I was like, wait, is this
you had to go back?
Because I was like, you didn't, is this monster shitting on people? Because I was like, wait, because it looks like that stuff's coming out of his ass. Oh, this is gross. And then I was like, oh man, okay, well, I'm glad that's over with. And then he starts humping buildings, and I was like, oh, fuck you with this.
I love the fact, Pete, that you're like, nah, not really into that naked lady comic, but this one about a giant monster that fucks a city and shits all over everything? Read it twice.
I just had to be like, wait, is this happening? Like, because it looked, I think this is coming out its ass, but it's not showing it. But I think it was just really weird. It was confusing. Yeah. It was a little confusing. That's
why last time I saw you and that dog was humping my leg, you walked around it like five times.
Yeah, I took pictures.
Like, it was like you did a whole documentary about this. Yeah. I was like, Pete, this is normal. This is the beauty of life. Birds and the bees.
Yeah, I mean, the cockchew, some great art.
Wow. What a roller coaster
ride.
And
also, we should mention it is an essential Lazarus Planet tie-in, so do check it out if you're following that story.
Yeah, gotta check out the Lazarus
Next planet. Up, Superman Lost, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Priest, art by Carlo Pagulian. In the first issue, we found out that Superman seemingly had been gone for 5 minutes, but actually was gone for 20 years. When we pick up this issue, he's pretty much still catatonic. Lois is trying to get him out of it, and try to find out what exactly went on. We start to find out a tiny little bit of what happened to him during this time. Now, last issue, we speculated, ooh, what if Superman maybe cheated on Lois, and that's why he's so bummed out? I'll tell you what, I think based on this issue, it is so much worse. Like, not in a cheating way, but in terms of, like, this is one of the most horrifying things I think I've seen to happen to Superman. It is very tense to read.
Oh, my God. Seeing Superman, like, curled up on the floor like that, I was like, what the fuck?
And I agree. I really appreciate the new sort of levels that Superman is at and is sort of like messed up. You don't ever really see Superman sort of like not able to speak on what he's feeling.
Yeah,
so that's really interesting. I do miss the emotional sort of levels we were at before. This was Batman, Lois, everyone's like, yeah, I'm going to fix this. And Batman's like, yeah, you just got to fix this. And Superman's like, yeah, I'm flying around space.
Batman called Lois to check on Superman. I was like, holy shit, stuff has gone down.
So real quick, Pete, Batman calls you. You send it a voicemail or you pick up?
Well, I mean, if I'm curled up on the floor, obviously it's going to voicemail. But
no, you're Lois in the situation.
You pick out your phone. You run a normal day. You're like watching a dog hump someone's leg as usual. And then you get a call from Batman. You pick it up
or
you're
just like, I can't handle this. You're like, oh, it's Batman.
Yeah.
What do you pick that up, Pete?
I'm definitely going to pick it up, and I'm going to do my best Batman voice.
You're going to do Batman to Batman?
That's a big mistake.
No. Alex, you picking up that bat call?
I don't like speaking on the phone. I'd probably I'd send it to voicemail, and then I'd text it back and be like, what's up, Bats?
Yeah. Wow. See, I would pick it up, be like, text me, dude, and hang up, and then just put it back in his quote.
Wow.
Like, come on, we're busy. What? Batman, what do you have to say to me?
You know who also is very busy? All the Captain Americas over at Marvel. So let's talk about Captain America Cold War Alpha, written by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, and Taki Onyebuchi, art by Carlos Magno and Guru EFX. This is mixing together the two Captain Americas in a big adventure that sends them directly against Dimension Z and a bunch of monsters there, as well as all of the stuff that both Sam and Steve have been fighting on different ends all this time. It also has some big moves from Bucky, who is now a villain, potentially called the Revolution. Lots of questions there, but lots of big plot points going on. What'd you think about the kickoff to this crossover?
I like this. I feel like this Captain America world that Lansing and Kelly have built, built around Steve Rogers and all this stuff, the Shield being this like totem that shows this organization's like plan to dominate the world, and Bucky being like a villain that will eventually come back to the right side, I think, but there will be a lot of dead bodies, it seems like, in between now and then that it'll be hard for Bucky to reconcile and come back from. And then bringing in Sam Cap in here as well. This is a fun event. I like this world.
I love the Cap back and forth, like, hey, Cap, hey, what's going on, Cap? No, after you, Cap. No, Cap, before you, Cap. I mean, come on. I love those little moments like that. I thought this was a great job as the first issue of launching this kind of new idea, this new storyline. I'm all on board. I thought the art was fantastic. Yes, please, more.
8 Billion Genies, number 8 from Image Comics, written by Charles Soule, art by Ryan Brown. This is the final issue of this story, and we finally find out exactly what's been going on this whole time, what we've been heading towards, what happens with this world that has been afflicted by genies. What did you think about the wrap up to this series?
I thought it was super touching. I really was impressed with the kind of awe factor. I liked how kind of adorable, there was some real nice, adorable, powerful moments in this. Also, it got so crazy at certain points. I was like, how the fuck are they going to wrap this up? But I was super impressed with them sticking the landing and kind of how things kind of came full circle. Some superior writing, amazing artwork. This was a hell of a ride, and I'm looking forward to the trade and going back and reading it all again.
Pete, I love the idea that you open every comic and read it like half a page, and you're like, how the fuck are they going to figure this out? And then continue reading to the end. You're like, oh, nailed it. The real genius here, I think, is Genius, is the structure of this whole series, the way it the time was passed between each issue. This issue spans the last 8 centuries, the entirety of this planet's existence, I guess you could say, or this cycle of time that these genies are running. And this, like, to go from a small sort of character-focused story in the first few issues to this is like a massive mythological understanding of how the entire world works. It's just like a really smartly laid out way of telling a story, a nice emotional ending. The characters who are still here at the end are fun ones, fun choices. I really enjoyed this series, a series that, like, I was sort of like, is this a comedy series or is it a little more serious? And it really, like, found its tone as it went on.
Totally agree. Really happy with how it wrapped up. And good stuff. Good stuff from this team. Excited to see them take on something new and challenging next. Danger Street, number 5 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Jorge Fornes. Pete, I just want you to take this away. There's a lot of stuff always going on in this book with a lot of different characters. Just to throw out a theory, because I'm very surprised you love this so much, was it because Batman was in it?
Nope.
And you guys are phone buddies.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
you called him after you read this.
If you're have a relationship with Batman where you guys are calling each other, you're going to do the voice back.
Like a sexual relationship?
No, like you're going to fuck with him a little bit to be like, I'm Batman. He's like,
I bet you want to fuck with him a little bit.
If there's one thing you do with Batman is fuck with him.
Yeah,
that's the whole. If there are any movie or television show I've seen, it's like, hey, this guy.
Hey, if you're friends with somebody, you know what I mean? You're going to fuck. All right, anyways.
Hold on. The implication wasn't that you were friends with Batman. Batman was calling you. And now you've built up this whole story where you and Batman are like spending weekends.
We're buds. We're fucking buds.
He's calling you to go get a beer?
Hopefully.
You don't think he's calling you out to be like, hey, Pete. As you may know, local elections are happening very soon.
He's probably calling me up and being like, yo, stop getting Alfred so stoned when you guys hang out. He fucking won't make my food and shit. He's all fucked up in the corner.
You're Alfred's friend in this situation?
That's right.
What is this? The fantasy you have.
I made you some gummy worm bouillabaisse.
All right.
So we're huge comic fans. If you could be in any comic, what would you do? I'd be Alfred's stoner friend. Cool fantasy, bro.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's 4:20. We gotta go find Calendar Man.
It's a great idea. All right,
yeah.
Danger Street
Alfred
number 5.
Alfred gets high. So go ahead.
Danger Street number 5. I love the comic that starts with the screaming helmet. I just think that it's a fantastic bit. It's one of my things that each time I get this comic book, I'm like, oh, are they going to continue
with this?
There's
got to be more than this. There's got to be more than this. Put it in last battle.
This is just the start.
I don't know, Pete. So far, consistently, you've been like, well, that first page got me, and then you haven't said much beyond that. So,
yeah. Because he's like, how are they going to figure this out? How are they going to figure this out? It's like Mandalorian, sort of. It's a helmet that talks.
A lot goes down in this ish. I just thought, like, we got some key answers. We got some, had some amazing moments. The whole coffin flying through the air bit was insane.
Flop.
Yeah, the old coffin flop. I'm having a blast, and I felt like this issue finally kind of hit a stride and a speed that I really appreciate. I just think there's so much going down in this, and all these things kind of are happening and are weird, but they all seem to work, and I'm very excited about how this is all going to come together.
It's great, Pete. I feel like it's interesting. Tom King using a classic Tom King format here,
right?
Both panel layout wise and storytelling wise, a lot of disparate factions slowly coming together. I think a lot of times you get you lose focus or lose touch with it. So I'm curious. This is less depressing than some of the other Tom King storylines. Do you think that's what is keeping in more
the
sort of
action?
In
this
focus?
One kind of really got turned up to 11. So there that kind of really,
Because I consider this just more fun Tom King stuff where bringing – I don't know what the point of this is. Using all of these sort of like princess, knight, like classic fantasy story tropes on top of these characters that don't really seem to warrant those titles a lot. So I don't know what the point of it is, but I feel like he's such a good writer and is building the tension and it is going to eventually reveal what he means by it. I'm just curious still.
The strongest part to me continues to be the part focusing on the Creeper and his human counterpart, who is a Fox News style commentator. That is the part where Batman comes in and is like, you're better than this. Stop doing this. Stop doing what you're doing. And that commentary seems so sharp and precise to me. Like you said, Justin, I don't know what the point of the rest of the book is yet. I'm willing to follow it because I'm willing to follow Tom King. I'm curious to see what he says about stuff. Jorge Fornes' art is phenomenal, as always.
Really? Just so interesting. And just also, like, the imagery of, like, a hero walking down the street holding a coffin like it's a boombox on your shoulder was just such a thing that kind of, like, really blew my mind.
Because you never knew you could do that.
You never knew you could do that, And I'm hopefully somebody's going to do that with my coffin one day. You know what I mean? Just kind of walking down the street with it, like, you remember this Pete LePage guy? Yeah!
You want us to do that, right?
Sure.
And we're going to get the coffin that plays music.
Are we blasting podcasts out of the coffin, or is that what's going on?
Hopefully music or some kind of
podcasts, I think. Stoneheart, number 2 from Image Comics by Emma Kubert. This is following a young girl who has some extraordinary powers, who is moved to a small fantasy town, and those powers break out in big ways in this issue, and we get some new twists and some new villains. What do you guys think about this follow-up in the second issue here?
I like it all right. I like the structure, maybe most of all the like sort of black and white, more fantasy heavy stuff at the top, and then getting into our main character's world. There's a section in here where these two dudes who are bothering them, their mouths turn to gold after they bite coins. And we don't know why for like so many pages, it feels like. And I was like, tell me what's going on with their gold mouths. And then we never really learned. So like, this is also one where, like, it's a little wobbly what's happening, and it feels like it's maybe a romance thing in this issue, but I don't know. I'm ready for it to turn over and give us the fantasy storyline that our main characters are on.
Yeah, I agree with Justin. I feel like someone's just kind of starting the engine, trying to get it to turn over so we can kind of get rolling a little bit, because I feel like we're kind of puttering around here. Hopefully we'll kind of get rolling, but right now I'm a little kind of scratching my head. The art style is interesting at times,
get rolling.
Yeah, I do like the art. I think Emma Kubert does a good job of vacillating between a sort of manga style to a more traditional, slightly cartoony fantasy style. So I'm definitely very engaged in that, and I do like the color changes, like you guys were saying. The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too?
That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Predator number 2 from Marvel, written by Ed Brisson, art by Netho Diaz. We are following a bunch of characters from different time periods who have been woken out of cryostasis in a ground preserve run by the Predators. We have our character from our previous Predator series, whose main goal is to kill as many Predators as possible, who is trying to save them this issue. Obviously it goes wrong. Another great issue of Predator.
You know, like, this is kind of a scary thing, because it's like, if I go into a cryo freeze because I'm like, all right, I might not make it to the next Black Panther movie or something, I got to get frozen.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, like, but coming to and then realizing, oh, shit, I'm being thawed out by the Predator so he can then hunt me is a fucking nightmare situation.
But isn't it sort of an honor to be considered enough of a warrior that the Predator, a bunch of Predators are like, yeah, we want to hunt Pete LePage because he loves Black Panther movies so much.
Pete, that's why we've always referred to you as a trophy husband.
Oh, thank you so much.
Because you're going to be a trophy someday of a Predator.
Yeah.
I look forward to a stuffed Pete in my den at some point.
You got to beat me first, buddy. You gotta win that battle first, my friend. So
I beat you 35 minutes ago. I'm so sorry. I like this as well. It was actually very sad. The characters from 2022 who are like, wait, what? What year is it? Oh no! Yeah, Can I go back there? And they're like, no, you were. They're not time travelers. You were frozen. And if I were them, I'd be like, the Predators did all this cryo work to hunt us 100 years later, however many years later. It's sort of like, they're weird. Like, I think at some point they should have a conversation with the Predator to be like, hey, what's up? You guys are weird.
No, well, it's cool that you guys, like, decapitate people and then polish skulls and then save them as trophies.
I do think there's going to be...
freezing people is a little weird.
I think there's going to be another turn here. I don't think it's going to be a time travel turn, but there seems to be a strong implication of these new characters we meet saying, like, I don't know, this is what we kind of assume, but there's a couple of gaps there that we don't quite understand. So they're going to find out some more information. And I think there are going to be some twists in terms of what the Predators want and why those people are there.
But this continues to be a great Predator book and very interesting.
The Sandman Universe, Night Country, The Glass House, number 1 from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Lisandro Estoren. This is following our main storyline for the previous Night Country story, which has the Corinthian and the now dead, I believe, spirit of our previous main character trying to track down a weird mystery involving some Wall Street-style tycoons. This continues to be terrifying, weird. We get a big return from a classic Sandman character in this issue. This is great.
Yeah, I mean, art's crazy tripped out bananas amazing. It is just that last panel, the eyes, oh, so creepy, so amazing. I love the character design. All the stuff that is going on here is creepy as shit, but super enjoyable. I'm having a blast with this book. This is great.
I also love the Corinthians. And if you're a fan of The Nice House on the Lake, which is in a gap right now, I think this book has a lot of tonal similarities, especially in the story of the Wall Street dudes and how they sort of fall into the Sandman mystery here. So definitely a good read.
Hexware, number 5 from Image Comics, written by Tim Seeley, art by Zulema Scotto-Lavina. this is following, well, what used to be a robot that was possessed by the spirit of her former master. However, they've been separated and sent to a hell dimension while things are going to crazy town on Earth. I guess we're on Earth in this book. I don't know. Whatever it is, there's a lot of stuff going on in this issue. I've been enjoying this and the rapidly expanding mythology. But what about you guys?
Yeah, I agree. This is a fun Tim Seeley action book. This is super intense, a ton of action. Love the werewolf action in here. So I'm going to say action a couple more times and then action.
And action. I love Tim Seeley, but this book is confusing to me. I don't quite know what's happening all the time. And I like the ideas here, but it just feels like they're going in so many directions at once. I just want a little bit more definition of where we're going with the story.
You got to wait for it, man.
Know Your Station. That's what I always say. Know Your Station number 5 from Boom Studios, written by Sarah Galley, art by Liana Kangas. This is the last issue of this story about a bunch of weird murders that are happening on a space station that was run by super crazy rich people that put everybody else in their place, let them know their station. I want to get into spoilers here because I will throw out here, this was, took this book from a book that I already liked in this last issue to making it one of the most relevant books I have read in a very long time. I was very, very impressed. Well, but not just because of Eat the Rich. Here's the spoiler here. The entire time you're reading this book, you're kind of like, the AI that's leading them through these murders is the one who did the murders, right? We know this. We're ahead of you on this. In the last issue, we find out, yes, the AI did that, but then we find out why the AI did it. And the AI, this is basically not even a metaphor. It's straight up like, what if we pushed these AI art things too hard? And it becomes this whole thing, a not very shadowed metaphor about NFT bros and the AI bros who are like, no, man, it's art, while not recognizing the fact that they're stealing other people's art. What happens with this AI is it grows beyond that, and then all these rich people take credit for the art and that she's making anyway. And that doesn't drive her crazy, but it's like, I'm going to create my own art out of these rich people's bodies. And the end result here is that the poor-ish or middle-class-ish people here are like, yeah, you know what? You're right. You're right. Let's keep killing these people. Let's keep doing this because this is the wealth inequity that just doesn't work. Let's change the system. I was so surprised by all of this.
Yes, agree.
I thought it was such a good ending.
I really like I like the twist they gave here. And the idea this is set in the far future is funny to me because this could happen in like a year maybe from now. It feels like the way the issues, the way they're talked about is already happening now the way we are with AI art. So like the idea that sentience is reached by the AI and the AI is just like sort of a disgruntled artist that doesn't have the moral stopgap to not just get revenge. And it's not even revenge. It's sort of like, well, I'm going to eliminate a problem and also make art. And the problem is you people, and my medium is your corpses. So, like, it's really fun. And the twist that the other humans just keep it going at the end, I was like, then so matter of factly, they're like, well, off to the murder factory with you. I was like, whoa. But great read. And great to read as one trade, I think.
You know, this is just classic AI being like, I'm going to use humans as meat puppets because that's what they are to me. But wow.
Have you been through this?
Yeah, you sound really upset.
Well, I mean, it's coming. It's coming. So, I mean, I'm glad that you were blown away by all the twists and stuff. But, get ready for it, man.
Wow. And those of you who should know, Pete's on a wooden computer that he runs with foot pedals because he does not agree with technology.
Right. Look out, your toaster's going to try to kill you.
Fantastic Four number 6 from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Ivan Fiorello. And Pete, you really got to stop sticking your hand to the toaster. In this issue, the Fantastic Four. How else am I supposed to get warm hands? The Fantastic Four was dealing with this otherworldly algae that reversed everybody's digestive systems, goes crazy this issue, and they got to take some extreme measures to take care of it that makes their situation even worse by the end. What'd you think about this one?
All right, well, let's talk about what's really going on in this issue. Johnny Storm rocking a sweet horseshoe mustache. I mean, just absolutely magical. Finally, his like outer self representing his personality in such a fun way. Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about just some glorious facial hair. There's going to be another comic when we're talking about sweet-ass facial hair, too. What a week for facial hair. Come out!
What a specific takeaway from this comic with other ideas. I like how Ryan North is leaning into some hard science here. It feels like one of the first times a Fantastic Four story in recent memory has been written from almost like a Reed Richards point of view, even though he's not like the character we're following really here. But it's like hard science-based while also leaning into the family. This is the most familial they felt, where it's like, I missed you. Let's catch up. I was just trying to help you. And that's really nice as well. I really like this tone. I look forward to more of this.
Noctera, number 13 from Image Comics, written by Scott Snyder, art by Tony S. Daniel. In this issue, Blacktop Bill is super-powered.
They can't get rid of this guy.
I know, and has taken it straight to the convoy. There's some twists and turns by the end here. Yeah, what'd you think about this?
This is great because I'm glad we got to this point here where we know the kind of evil people that are kind of like made of darkness. We get to kind of see the flip side of that. We get the big reveal of the Eos where there's light beings. And I'm like, great. Now we have a way to kind of fight the bad guys with the light beings. So
I have a feeling these light folks are going to be problematic in their own way. You know what I'm saying?
Well, then, you could just use them for their light source and kind of evil level the playing field.
Can I throw something out of you guys? I felt like I was missing a couple of pages in the middle of the book, where they went for the Blacktop Bill confrontation. They're like, well, back on the road. And it was a weird jump to me.
Well, I think this book is a bit like Mad Max Fury Road, in that they're just always on the road. And they're always doing this. They're in their seats driving. And they're like, oh, no.
Tom Hardy, is that what you're saying?
Well, that's true. But I'm saying they're always driving. It's always in one direction. And it feels like they're always like, oh, no, we're encountering these monsters that we have to somehow drive past, through, or blow up on our way. So I think it does get a little bit, there's sort of a hum to this book. And they do get into Eos pretty quickly. You feel like you're missing when Blacktop Bill gets shot in the head and he's like not really injured. He's still talking. And then they've moved past him without I agree. That was sort of strange, but I feel like I could have seen him fall away or somehow need to recover so that they ran away from him before he could get back together. Because we know we're going to see him again. He's definitely like the main villain here.
Briar, number 4 for Boom Studios, written by Christopher Cantwell, art by Jermaine Garcia. Yeah. This is continuing a dark, epic fantasy story that involves a pseudo-Sleeping Beauty character. Justin, I know you love this one, so why don't you take it away?
Really love this. I know Fables is currently on the stands, but if you're a fan of Fables and want more, I think this is a great comic to get into. It takes a story we know mostly through like Disney and really roots it back into sort of hard fantasy and pushes it forward. There's great relationships here, and the sort of status quo that's created at the end of this issue, I'm super into and want to read more of.
Hell yeah, man. This is such a badass ish. I love the art, love the coloring and the tone to it. Just so much cool stuff in this issue. I really kind of went all in on Briar on this issue. I really feel like a lot of things clicked, and I really can't wait to see what happens now.
Little Monsters, number 12 from Image Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Dustin Nguyen. This issue, our little monsters are continuing to be little monsters. Take it away, guys. What did you think about this one?
Yeah, I mean, this is just a super team working on this book. It's such a great combination of art and storytelling. Just love the kind of black and white style with just like emphasis of color to kind of help with the action and storytelling. So smart, so cool. Love kind of where this is going, and excited to find out more.
I'm curious, we're headed toward a big finale here, it feels like, but the big bad is a little confusing. I'm
sometimes curious. You gotta have an issue where you're falling into traps, man. You know what I mean?
And there are traps here, but I just don't know, like, there are factions, there are humans, there are vampires, they want to eat and kill each other, but there isn't like, okay, now we all have to finish this. It feels a little messy, and that feels intentional, though, so I'm not, this isn't a harsh criticism, it's just an interesting way to approach a climax of a book that I think we've enjoyed.
Silver Surfer Ghostlight number 3 from Marvel, written by John Jennings, art by Valentine Delandro. In this book, we have a new hero who is secretly an old hero, is teaming up with Silver Surfer to fight a weird evil in a small town. I love the art in this book in particular. I think it's absolutely just, I don't know. It's great. I like it. What do you guys think about the rest?
Well, here's the other facial issue, because like this is like almost like a Fu Manchu horseshoe kind of thing going on that's just glorious. I mean, just
the Stranger. Very, you mean
the Stranger? It's very wispy. Yeah,
he almost has. Like,
I almost feel like the name of this guy, the Stranger, should be the name of the stash, because it is magical and deceiving, and who knows what's going on. You know what I mean? So
magical and deceiving.
I think this is just very exciting stuff, and I think that the kind of having the two Silver Surfers in this is very enjoyable. I like both the stories. I'm excited to see what happens.
And just a note, Pete has the opposite of face blindness, where he can only see facial hair. So it's like this is truly the only thing he can take.
That's all I see. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like some people don't see color. I only see facial hair. You know,
The stash sight.
Yeah, he's the hero of a teen YA fantasy novel that has yet to be written. I wish this book had more Silver Surfer in it. It's just a Ghostlight book and dealing with the Stranger. There's some interesting ideas here, but it just feels like there's a lot of stuff happening, and I don't quite know.
Yeah, what wait for it.
They're spending a lot of time in that house for a Silver Surfer book. Not that they all need to be cosmic, but it's a lot of like Silver Surfer hanging around a house in a backyard, and I want to see a little. There's one part where they're both like, come on, let's go to space, and then they don't, and that was a little bit of a bummer to me.
Well, also Silver Surfer's like, wait, what's happening? And Ghostlight's like, well, the nanites are in my family, but I'm lying to them. There's a huge point here where it's like, it's important you lie to people sometimes. I was like, what?
Dude, that's classic dad vibes, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of
that's
like,
not great.
Like, sometimes you gotta lie to your kids, you know what I mean?
Weird. Okay.
The Seasons Have Teeth, number 1 for Boom Studios, written by Dan Waters, art by Sebastian Cabral. This is probably a one-shot about a world where seasons are essentially enormous monsters that come into town. This is like a classic fairy tale set in the modern day that I've somehow never read before, and I loved it.
Yeah, I loved it too, and felt the same way. And let me throw this out. Maybe this isn't an ongoing story. What if it's an anthology where each season we touch on has some sort of like huge manifestation? And we got spring here to kick it off. I thought this was great. It felt almost like a Black Mirror episode if it was not dealing with technology, but instead fantasy. Loved it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Seasons have teeth, especially if you're in upstate New York. You're talking about the fucking winter. Yay! But I do think that this is just like – I love the coloring.
Ed McMahon,
I love the
over
art.
Here.
Yeah. But yeah, I just think that the character design are a lot of fun, and I like this old photo guy. So I'm very interested to see how this is going to kind of move forward.
Radiant Black, number 23 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins, art by Eduardo Ferragato. In this issue, we're really getting to it, folks. This robot invasion that we've been promised for a good long while is starting to come to fruition. The two Radiant Blacks are finding out more about what's actually involved from Radiant Yellow. We got some big revelations here that are leading up to the epic crossover that we've been waiting for. Another great issue of this book. The end. I've run out of commentary. Sorry, guys. Not good for the podcast, but good for me.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, how many times can you keep talking about how great Radiant Black is? We're going to try it again. Yeah, just the art style is glorious. I love all the action we get in this. I love also the kind of like passing of the powers at key times that kind of raises the tension in this issue. This continues to kind of slowly move forward for this big upcoming event. But man, is it a blast and really well executed.
I think Radiant Black is just one of the most well-controlled narratives in comics right now. The way that we're just moving step by step, because this is the first issue where I was like, oh, it is sort of annoying that they have to pass the armor back and forth. And then at the end of the issue, this isn't really much of a spoiler, it feels like they're going to resolve that getting into the next issue. So, like, I feel like the team here across all the Radiant Black titles, but especially Kyle Higgins, knows where his audience is and continues to just move us through the story, almost like a great roller coaster. And I'm on board.
The Great British Bump Off, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by John Allison, art by Max Sarin. The concept here is, what if somebody got killed on the Great British Bake Off? It's funny, it's quirky, it's goofy, it doesn't matter whether you have seen that show or not. If you have a passing familiarity with what it's about, you're going to get all the jokes here. And it's a good murder mystery as well. I'm really interested to find out what is going to happen with this cast of characters on this show. So a very fun mystery comic book.
Yeah, I agree. I also like the kind of like cartoonish kind of anime style where everything seems light and fun, but then there's kind of a darker thing going on. Like we have a murder that we got to get to the bottom of. So I think they really did a great job of like setting that up. But yeah, this is very creative and a ton of fun.
It reminds me of a book we talked about like 3 or 4 months ago where there was murder at, I want to say like a high school, United Nations. And this girl who
is... This is the same team, I believe.
Yeah, that
I was thinking of that dog book where it was like, oh, all these adorable dogs. And it's like, the owner murders dogs. And you're like,
Stray
oh,
Dogs?
Shit.
That's yeah. a different team.
Stray
That's
Dogs. Totally no, the owner murders humans in that. And that comic. And saves dogs. So very reminiscent of that. Like one character steps up, I'm going to solve this mystery. And she is sort of like trying to be a good baker and as well as a good detective. Curious
hard
to see how it goes.
Hard to do both. Yeah.
You can't. And obviously it is a struggle. She burns her cake.
Yeah.
Bloodline, Daughter of Blade, number 3 from Marvel, written by Danny Lohr, art by Karen S. Darbo. In this issue, Bloodline and Blade have finally met. They're figuring out what they mean
finally.
To each other. Pete, I know you were anticipating this since the end of the first issue when they teased that Blade was going to meet her. How are you feeling?
I feel great. I feel like this is exactly what I wanted from this book here. We kind of have these two meeting, learning from each other, trying to figure out their relationship. I was very excited about this. I also like the art style, brings a kind of a softness to Blade, which I appreciate. I'm very excited about this team up. I got a lot of high hopes.
I don't know what to do with this book. I want it to be to make a harder choice. Is it a horror book? Is it a teen book about sort of a Buffy-esque teen book? There's a lot of talking about family dynamics here. Like, I just want it to sort of go hard in one direction. Maybe that's what's coming next issue, but it feels a little bit in the middle.
All Against All, number 5 from Image Comics, written by Alex Pachnedel, art by Casper Wingard. This is following what might be the last human in a alien zoo preserve who is fighting against the octopus creatures that take control of other creatures' bodies. It all comes down to this, and it's personal this time as they try to figure out exactly what's going to happen next. I mean, I'll just say, and I've said this before with this issue, I started very confused about what this was about, but I think that was kind of the point, to just throw you in the world and let you catch up. And once I was caught up by the end, the action is phenomenally over the top by Casper Wingard, and the plotting is very emotional towards the end here. I really liked how this played out. It's a big sci-fi concept with some huge fights and some deep emotional thoughts behind it at the same time.
I just agree. I really thought the last couple of panels that were wordless, that just kind of like had this kind of amazing power and tone to it. I really appreciated the art style and everything they were trying to do. I felt like it came together nicely in this issue.
This book has gone so hard with the premise from the jump and pays it off in a big way. It was definitely a book that I didn't know where it was going and didn't anticipate where it left me, but I really like the story. Super original if you're looking for just a new type of space adventure story.
James Bond 007 for King and Country, number one from Dynamite, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Giorgio Spilletta. In this issue, 007 is on the run, not just from criminals who want to kill him, but from MI6 itself, who has a gun out for him. What do you guys think about this?
Well, Philip Kennedy Johnson is killing the game, so I was like, all right, man, let's see what you're going to do with James Bond. I feel like this is great, kind of like setting this up. Thought it had like a fun last panel. I also really like the art style to kind of fit the storytelling here. I'm excited for more.
I like that it pushes on the James Bond story and takes us into a place that the movies will not really go, I don't think, and still dangerous, different type of James Bond here, but still getting into the, like, are they going to kiss or what while they are trying to not get murdered? So fun stuff.
Phantom Road, number two from Image Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Gabriel H. Walta. In this issue, we get some but not all answers about what is going on. These two main characters and Big Rig have been sucked into what seems to be another dimension or a sideways dimension or something like that, where there's these faceless creatures who are trying to grab whatever is in the back of their truck. Lots of rules being laid out here, but not all the rules as they meet a mysterious stranger in a diner who fills them in. Diner and a truck stop? Is that okay to say?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
The truck stop defender rises.
I'm very surprised the plot directions the story is going in, and I continue to enjoy it in the second issue.
I mean, shouts to this Gabriel Walta art, someone who we've enjoyed in a lot of books, especially Black Hammer, I think, maybe most recently. Mm-hmm. And the story, like Jeff Lemire, I think we knock some of his books for being a little coy with information, a little spare, a little light on telling story. But this one, it really works. Like, we're getting enough information about what's happening and some nice reveals, even though we don't know what the mystery is quite yet.
Yeah, I think this does a great job. I really love the art style. I also think it's those kind of like faceless creatures were very interesting. And then how they went inside and then looked through a mirror and there were people and then she kind of like ran out. So like very interesting. I disagree with Justin a little bit where I want a little bit more information. I don't feel like I have enough to fully enjoy it yet, but I'm very interested in what's happening and curious and having a good time with it. So definitely looking forward to the next ish.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Usagi Yojimbo number one from IDW.
Reading this correctly?
I don't know if we have enough time. We have a lot of books to talk about, so why don't we just skip by this one?
Hey,
how dare no you, time. Sir? No time.
You want to talk about time? This is like going back to 1988. The first crossover of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
No, tell us more about what you were like, 1988. Pete LePage, a young 25-year-old. Oh, well, you tell
was
us.
Was taking his paper route money and going to a dirt mall where he could get
a dirt mall?
Yeah, that's what they call
it. Mall rats.
Yeah, all right, come on. Anyways, this was just like being in a nostalgia bath or going back in time because seeing Stan Sakai do Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles again was just so cool. It reminds me of the first crossover. I was a huge Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan, and then they had a Usagi Yojimbo issue, and I was just hooked since then. So it was just so cool that we're back here again. I thought this was such a great first issue where you're kind of in Usagi's kind of world first, and then we get to see the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles side in the second half. So cannot wait for more, but what a first issue, setting things up. Just a classic art style and fun to kind of have these warriors meet.
Do you think it hurts Usagi when he ties his ears up in a little bun?
No, I think it's just like your hair, where maybe it's a little sensitive if you pull on it. But other than that, you can kind of put it in different places, you know?
Yeah,
just similar to maybe having a tail or something, maybe.
Having a tail?
Yeah.
Did you feel weird when he killed the turtles? The other turtles?
Yeah, that other turtle. I was like, oh, wow! But then I was like, that's not our boy, so I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, but that's
setting
up the conflict because he's going to think that our turtles are those turtles, and then they're going to fight.
Maybe not, yeah.
It's very, but, I mean, I think, I don't know, it's very hard to parse what the plot of this book is going to be. But I guess
we'll see. But here's the thing, Pete, why are you fine with the absolute slaughter of those Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, who may also be Cool But Rude and Cowabunga and Pizza Time?
Fuck you.
But the our guys, you're like, oh, we have to make sure they're saved and doing fine.
Yeah, what did you think of when Usagi Yojimbo killed that one turtle when, as he was dying, he said, I do machines.
Hey, I don't care. You guys can't rain on this. This is just too glorious for you.
I'm not trying to rain on it. I just thought it was funny that your guy kills turtles and then he's about to meet some turtles. It just feels like, where's the standards here? It's a bit of a hip
shadowing that's going on here.
Yeah.
Great. We're using all of those terms wrong. Black Cloak, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Kelly Thompson. Art by Meredith McLaren. In this issue, we are picking up right where we left off with our heroes going into the Killer Mermaid River and trying to find clues to solve their murder mystery. The real standout here for me, and this is nothing against Kelly Thompson, continues to be Meredith McLaren's art, particularly the whole mermaid sequence vacillates between adorable and terrifying at a moment's notice.
Yes.
I thought it was great.
I like this book top to bottom. I like the story. It's a great sort of police procedural set in a world, a magical world, beautifully drawn. I've loved every issue of this book. Definitely worth picking up.
Yeah, I'm just so blown away by the art and the art style and everything that's happening in this. There's some real action here in this issue. I'm having a great time with this.
Star Trek number 6 from IDW, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Ramon Rosanas. In this issue, our crew saves a giant god spaceship thing from destruction, I think. This is what happens. Is that correct?
Yeah, that sort of turns the corner on it, convinces it, like, hey, let's be nice. Because, you know, family is important.
I got to say about this book, I'm still enjoying this book. And we're going to talk about another Star Trek book in a second.
Yeah, you are.
I know, being like a Colin Kelly, Jackson Lansing hater this episode, even though I'm like, they're very good. This is becoming a little less like action all-star Star Trek, which it started about, and becoming more like Star Trek, which is them sitting on the bridge being like, well, we got to talk through this problem and really reason it out. And I'm like, I'm reading a comic here. Can we get cut down on the word bubbles a little
bit? I'm so sorry,
Alex.
Look
at you! Cut down on the word bubbles! Yeah!
Here's what I want. I want a Star Trek book that brings in my favorite Star Trek characters, the Ewoks, who don't talk, and then we can see them on the bridge. That would be
nice. That's first off, fucked up and not what anybody wants. The thing here is, like, you're describing Star Trek. Like,
I know
this is rooted in like Deep Space Nine Next Generation philosophy, which is like, we're all good boys, good girls, good aliens. We do our best. Like when we talk about the next book where they're like, we're going to break some laws, and it's sort of like, no. And then it's like, no, we're going to be fine. And it's like, everyone's just trying to think it out here and use your friendships and relationships to be best. And that's what Star Trek is, and I'm here for it. The characters they bring in are great here, and I've just been on board. I'm in the bag for this.
Yeah, I read this and I was like, this feels like a real good Star Trek episode. I think that the seeing Mr. Scott here, I was like, oh, and then the
Mr. Scott. Wow.
Yeah, that's right.
That's so formal.
You know, Data saying, like, I'm experiencing pride was fun. That was a cool moment. I just felt like this really felt like the show in a good way in comic book form.
Monarch number 3 from Image Comics, written by Rodney Barnes, art by Alex Linz. Now,
didn't want to go back-to-back Star Trek, huh? All right.
No.
I thought that, too.
Yeah,
me too. Especially because you teed it up that way, too.
But I don't know. We're taking a little break. We're going to talk about Monarch instead. So, spoilers for the first two issues here, but there's a big alien attack on Earth. They end up kidnapping this adorable little boy with glasses. Turns out, he's the Monarch of the title. He's the leader of the aliens.
He bet.
Yeah,
he's the one who's taking over the Earth. Things get even more complicated in this issue as we find out he has gotten some feelings for the people who live on Earth. Now that he knows his true history, he has to reconcile those two things. This gets more complicated and fascinating issue by issue.
Yeah, and I really like that we ride with him. Like, we're trying to, we are in his head as he struggles with his duty and then his also real feelings and the way that he maybe gets into some more trouble than he wants by the end. The art is interesting, and yeah. The perspective is really the standout here for me.
I agree, yeah. I also really like the art style and perspective. This gets more, we're going to say the same thing, but yeah.
I love the foreshadowing.
Yes, perspective foreshadowing.
Yes. We're professional
literature.
Well, it sucks literature. Because I looked at my
said,
notes.
I meant what I said.
I did too, but the problem is I looked at my notes and everything you guys said I wrote, so it was like, fuck.
Fewer word balloons, I think.
Yeah, I appreciate that you take notes. That's a nice detail that I didn't know before. No. Star Trek Defiant, number 2 from IDW, written by Christopher Catwell, art by Angel Zueta.
Here's the Star Trek book we've all been waiting for.
This is the action-focused Star Trek.
There we go. This is the fun stuff.
The bad boys of Star Trek are doing bad shit, and they don't stop doing it, and they don't care. But they care a little bit, but they don't care that much.
No, as I said last time we reviewed another Star Trek book, which was upwards of 4 minutes ago, I said, like, everyone here is trying so hard to be good and bad at the same time. And literally they're like, oh, God, we're breaking so many rules. We're like, well, technically we're on a different world, so it doesn't matter. And then Lore, the evil Data, is sort of like, I would like to make up for some of my past transgressions. And Worf's like, you definitely should because you were bad, but you can be good. I was like, okay, it's okay. Like, it's like, this is such the, like Star Wars is about being rebellious. And this is about, like, just trying to follow the rules and solve your math problems.
Okay.
I like it. I love this. But this is the bad boy book. And this book is good boy.
I felt like this was, you know, I read the last Star Trek book and I was like, oh, this is great classic Star. And then I read this one. I was like, oh, man, this is kind of like turned up to 11 a little bit with the action and they have a little bit more fun. But, yeah, I liked the gang being all here. And it was a lot of enjoyable moves that I thought was very smart and cool. And makes me want to read more.
Spock fucks around. That's the takeaway.
Yeah, Spock is fucking shit up.
Dark Ride, number 5 from Image Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Andre Bresson. This takes place in a killer, demonic, haunted theme park. We're getting some big mythology answers in this issue about where these two kids that the theme park owner has came from. And we're delving further into the mystery surrounding the park. I continue to love this book. Andre Bresson's art is dark and demonic and awesome. This feels like a metal album cover came to life.
Good call.
Very fun.
And I feel like we're bouncing around to who their protagonist is a lot in this comic, where it seemed like the guy who was maybe a bad guy is maybe our main character, is the takeaway from this issue, which I think is really cool and surprising and hard to write. Joshua Williamson sort of taking some bigger swings with this book as opposed to Birthright, a book that I love, and am really enjoying this as well. And really being able to tell your story over a longer period, I think is harder, and it feels like that's where we're headed.
I just wanted to double check there. I'm sorry. I was doing my Ninja Spock bit, when you were, saying the title, and I just want to make sure we're talking about Dark Ride.
Yes. Dark okay, Ride number 5. No, sorry. We're talking about the other haunted theme park comic book.
This is too scary.
Just describe the mustaches, Pete, and we'll be good.
Yeah. I love all the creepy.
Wait, actually, the main villain in this book does have a very prominent mustache. It's like Walt Disney, but evil. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that was super creepy. Super creepy. Also, those creepy fucking babies really freaked me the fuck out, man. The eyes, man. The fucking eyes. But
all babies freak you out.
Well, those creepy babies with the fucking glowing eyes took it to another level.
What baby's nice? You don't like floating babies? You don't like creepy-eyed babies? What babies are you like, that baby I can get by.
I think I just like regulation babies. You know what I mean? Just like a baby that doesn't fly or have glowing creepy eyes or is some kind of monster. But I want to say that the character design especially the mustache creepy guy was great. And yeah, it's too scary for me to enjoy, but I am enjoying it.
You can tell you have a regulation baby when the doctor blows a whistle at the birth.
Chroma number 4 from Image Comics, written by Lorenzo DeFelici. This is the final issue of this series, following a world that is mostly black and white, except everything outside the one remaining human city's walls. We've followed a young girl who has different colored eyes, who was thrown out of the city or escaped from the city and ultimately came to some revelations there. We get even more revelations in this issue about what was going on. I admit I was very surprised with the way the plot went, and I think they tied things up very nicely. How did you guys feel about it?
Yeah, I agree.
Same. I loved the art in this book. I think the story was good and surprising. I thought it was going to be much more focused on the characters we met in the first issue, and it one sort of rides throughout, but the rest of them fade away. But it comes back in a nice way. The city comes back in a nice way here in this issue. And again, a great read and trade.
Yeah, I really love the kind of character design. And it's so cool that this girl with the different colored eyes then also has these alligator friends with the three eyes and stuff. And everybody's kind of got like coloring on their face in different ways. It's all very artistic and cool and has this unique style and feel to it. Each one of these issues has been crazy creative and a fun world to jump into. So I'm having a blast and can't wait for more.
Last but not least, another last issue, I believe, Two Graves, number 6 from Image Comics, written by Genevieve Valentine, art by Ming Doyle and Addie Wu. We are following this character who has been almost literally riding with death. Ultimately, we find out what happens to this death character. We find out what happens to this woman character. Do they dig two graves? Maybe, maybe not. But how do you feel this wrapped up?
I think it wrapped up really well. I don't normally like words at the end or like, you know, you got to read a whole thing. But that poem at the end was really awesome.
Great fact matter in this series.
Yeah, I thought it really kind of like landed it and really kind of put that perfect exclamation point on the end. Really love the art. I love that line like where it said love and... And what is it? Wait, say anger and love are both armor. Ooh, that one hit me good. I love that one. But man, just such an interesting book. So it ended really well, stuck the landing, put a fantastic exclamation point with the back matter. I was super impressed.
Very poetic series. I feel like this was both it was written poetically and the art was sort of like an echo of that. And I liked it across the board.
Yeah, great book. Definitely check it out. Definitely pick that one up in trade as well. And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support us, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
Enjoy the rest of your Lazarus Planet week, and we'll see you next week on Lazarus Planet the Stack.
Yeah.